Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the TetraCast, RPG Site's weekly podcast. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, we have Josh Torres.
Happy post-Gamescom pre-PAX West episode.
Adam Vitale.
Hello.
And James Glizio.
Guten Tag.
Mikhail is sleeping, and Chow had an IRL conflict this morning, so it'll be the four of us. And yeah, it's the we're going to be covering all the Gamescom news this week, so that's it. Just kidding. Anything RPG-related from Gamescom, of course, we'll talk about. A lot of headlines here. I tried to extract like the biggest, most pertinent ones, but there we could talk for hours and hours and hours about everything out of Gamescom. We do have a few of the late August releases that we'll be talking about here. And of course, we'll have a lot of games are slating the release dates for the end of the year or talking about their release plans for 2027. So we have a lot of release date updates, a lot of trailers, gameplay videos, extended like deep dives, everything, the usual stuff that you come out of Gamescom. And yeah, like Josh alluded to, it doesn't really slow down because you go right into PAX and then you go right into TGS and then you go right into the holiday deluge of releases and on from there. Right on into February where nothing slows down there either. Yeah, like Josh alluded to, we're going to be talking about everything out of Gamescom, but it's not going to slow down because, you know, we'll talk about anything RPG related out of the Gamescom event that I think it's just wrapping up. We go right into PAX West, PAX Prime, right after that, TGS, then the holiday releases in late October, early November. Then it doesn't really slow down going into the next year. As we all know, February was already packed. And as we go through the news this week, a lot of games are either, you know, aligning themselves or planning to for release in early 2027. So it's going to be a busy several months, and it always is. So it's nothing new for us, but we'll cover everything. I tried to put the most, you know, pertinent news and headlines in our you know, show notes for today. A lot of gameplay features, a lot of trailers, a lot of previews from RPG Site writers and contributors. We'll talk about that. The game we'll talk about at the top here is going to be the release of Star Wars Zero Company, one of the last kind of August releases before we go into September. We'll talk about some Witcher news. We'll talk about some other trailers that released over the Gamescom week. And we'll just take it from there. So to start out, Star Wars Zero Company. So James is going to take point and talk about this one for us. James, you actually reviewed this not for RPG Site, but for, I hope I get this right, GameSpot? Was that it? Game Informer? I don't remember. Game Informer. Damn it. I got it wrong. but we do also have a review on our site that was written up by Scott White. So we'll talk about some of the impressions that I read from his review, even though he's not here to talk about it on the cast. But James, just for Star Wars Zero Company, just take it away, what your impressions were, what your thoughts were on it, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I reviewed it. I reviewed Zero Company for Game Informer. So that's up on the website over there and will be in the next issue. So that's pretty neat.
I didn't even think about the whole written aspect of it, getting it in the actual print.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when you do a review for print and you have the very strict limitations to how many characters you can put in the review, it's pretty different from what we do here, where it's like there isn't any guidelines on how long or short a review can be, just to play it by ear. But when you're writing for like a magazine, it's very different, and it means that you're really kind of have to focus very specifically on what you're writing about in the review. And to a certain extent, it's like, oh, the review is not going to be perfect. You just have to be happy with what you're able to get within the confines of the limitations, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, because when I'm writing a review and I say like, oh, I really should talk about this thing here that I glossed over, I can just add a paragraph or add four paragraphs. But then you're like, nope, can't do that. I'm already at the word count. I could see that being kind of like a very,
it's very traditional. Like it's very old school. Like when you're like, you know, it's like writing for a newspaper column, you know, and depending on the section of the newspaper, you have different limits. If you're on the front page, obviously you have different limitations than like when you're obviously in the third or fourth page and what section of the newspaper you're going to be in, similar to a magazine as well. So it's always interesting to see like the differences in that, how that's evolved over time, because you have to be more concise, you have to be very pointed, you have to also think about Like, you have to use language that will catch the reader's eye and compel them to read it right there and then. Well, so you have to be pretty on the to the point. So, like, I guess it's, that's exactly like how you've, you know, treated that review. Like, kind of give us like your overall, like, the thing, if you were, when you were writing it for Game Informer, what was like the one or two things you really wanted to convey to people within those limitations?
The resource management, I'd say, was the big main one. I do think the everything you do outside the missions is actually pretty in-depth, and you have to kind of focus in on, you can't do everything in a single playthrough. You just have to specialize, which I think is generally pretty good to do when you're designing a tactical game like that, is you want, especially something like XCOM, where like the resource management is kind of the point. You just want to make sure you design a game where it's like you have to make those choices. You can't do everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when you go back to that hub, it's interesting because it's not, for me personally, like it's like XCOM is not just the like, you know, the only game of like that I associate with like these Firaxis alumni at Bitreactor creating this game. Like I really loved Marvel's Midnight Suns when I reviewed that for the site. But I think one of the things that kind of felt out of place in some respect was this divide over the really excellent like deck building gameplay aspect of it that really worked for me, and like and the back at the mansion stuff with Marvel's Midnight Suns, where like, you know, having that relationships with the superheroes was nice and all, but all the wandering the sanctuary mansion and the island with it really didn't work for me. That seemed to be a common sentiment. So I'm interested, how does Star Wars Zero Company like structured, like I don't know too much about the structure about this game, but is it something like you deploy on missions and you come back to a home base? What is this resource manager you speak of, like what is this home base like compared to XCOM? Yeah. And Marvel's Sun.
So your home base is just called the Den, and it is, you do walk around it in third person, but it's relatively small. It's not like the, from what I understand, the Midnight Suns mansion, where there was a decent amount to it. There's essentially like three rooms. The room you spawn in whenever you head back from a mission, the crew quarters where you can talk with different crew members, and sometimes they'll unlock like a side mission for you to do that ties into their story. And then there's the main portion of the Den, which has the mission table, which lets you choose operations missions to go out on, another section where you can choose upgrades you want to invest in. You can upgrade your units by like choosing which skills you want to invest in. You can also as your relationships between your different crew member or different operators increases, you can actually there's like a pick three type of thing where it's like, hey, the relationship with these two characters has improved. There's like a permanent buff associated with that, where it's like assist damage between those two characters is increased the more that their relationship improves. But also you can choose, hey, you can get a permanent buff of one of three randomized things for both of these characters, and you just choose which one of them you want. There's also like a sword that you can buy, like it's random roll each cycle,
okay,
so on such to get different equipment, like mods for their weapons, or like a grenade you can throw, stuff like that. And that's what I mean in terms of resource management.
Then okay,
there is, of course, the infirmary, because this does by default have permadeath, but the way it works is that if your character gets knocked down, they will get an injury when they get brought back up. Usually, there are some exceptions. And if they get, but there's basically, it's three shots. First time they go down, they get an injury. Second time they go down, they get a second injury. Third time they go down, they're gone. They're just dead.
And that's persistent throughout the entire like game?
You can put them in the infirmary for a bit to restore, like to recover their injuries. But that costs money, and it means that you can't use them while they're recovering from their injuries. And on the higher difficulty modes, there is like a more expensive option on the lower difficulty that lets you just instantly heal an injury, but it's more expensive, and you can't use it on a hard difficulty and above.
Okay.
So you can only use the beds, and there's like a limited number of beds. And one of the upgrades you can get is you can increase the number of beds in the infirmary so that you can restore more of your party, like your operators, at once. So stuff like that.
I'm curious, when you're deploying on missions, on XCOM and Marvel's Midnight Suns, usually when you deploy on missions, you're right at the mission already. There's not like any like downtime going from the next fight to the next fight. How does this game treat it? Because I've heard like this game actually does have like walking around when you're on a mission, and then when a battle starts, your squad kind of deploys out into that XCOM isometric view, similar to like Mario's and Rabbids and Mutant Year Zero.
Yeah, so that is a thing. Only in story missions, though. For anything that's okay. not a story mission, you just immediately load into a location. Story missions, you actually do need to, like, there will be moments where you walk from objective A to objective B or stuff like that. And story missions, there's more than one combat encounter usually. And things can be different. Like, there's some story missions where there might be three or four separate combat encounters you have to worry about. There was one story mission that I thought was like a highlight where there's only the one combat encounter, but it's kind of flipped where you start at like the end and then it's like, hey, everything's falling apart behind you. So you need to deal with enemies while also just retreating, because every turn more and more of the play space is going to be inaccessible. And it's like a death zone.
Oh, okay.
So constantly running and constantly trying to also make sure you're not just dying because of the enemies, because there's enemies that are spawning every turn, or almost every turn, but you also have to worry about, again, that death zone, which is really fascinating.
And for the, when you're deploying your squad, I'm not exactly sure the exact amount of characters you're deploying, or if there's different limits, but in terms of like different types of characters are you deploying, is there like a hard limit yet? It said like, oh, you can only have like two stormtroopers in a squad, or can you have like a whole squad? And it's more, it's up to you.
There's an achievement that you can for clearing a mission with a full team of astromechs, which are like the R2-D2 looking things.
Okay. I didn't know that they could fight, but I associate them with R2-D2s.
They can't really fight, but you can load them up with grenades and be like, go do a crime.
Okay. Nice. And what was your personal like go-to squad that you felt comfortable with when you played?
I like snipers. I like snipers mm-hmm. a lot. so you can. There's regular classes, but like once you get about a third of the way, a little bit less than halfway through the game, you unlock second specializations that you can apply to enemy to your units. And my favorite specialization was I had a sniper that was also a scout, which meant that one of the passives that scouts do is when you shoot someone, they'll get spotted, which makes it easier for the rest of your team to shoot them. So you can see why having...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I've connected the dots. That seems really good. Very potent combination. And I've heard a lot of praise for like the general story of this game. Like, obviously the gameplay is solid. You know, if you like XCOM, you like those types of strategy games, this is a game that does it well. But you know, the story is never something that we should take for granted.
Are of the same mind here, where we just thought the story was okay.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I was reading Scott's review, and this is my interpretation of his words, not necessarily his words. It seemed like Scott really liked the characters, but the premise of the story, particularly the antagonist and the scenes around them, just fell very flat or felt very generic. That seemed to be like the two-sentence summary of the review.
I would agree with that, but I'm not even super big on the characters, if I'm being real.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
It is acceptable for what it's trying to be, but it's nothing special. I feel like one of the things I mentioned in my review for Game Informer, I actually had to kind of extrapolate a little bit and go in depth. As I said, this story kind of means nothing unless you're like deep in the weeds for like the Star Wars extended canon, because there's like references to stuff from like the Clone Wars, like TV show, and like the other animated stuff. And there's also like some direct references to the Respawn, like Star Wars Jedi games. So if you don't have any connection to those, I don't know how much this story is going to do for you. Like, I thought the story was fine, but it just was whatever.
It's one of those. I'm just like a super generic Star Wars fan, and I'm not like up to date on that. But I know like of the Clone Wars show and the general idea. Like, does it seem like I would be missing out?
Let me give an example. There's a couple of missions where you have a guest unit who, if you're familiar with the Star Wars extended like canon with the animated shows, you would definitely know who this guy is. But if you haven't touched any of those, you would not understand who this guy is and why he's a big deal. Rex, the stormtrooper slash like clone.
You're right. I don't know who that is. Brian and I are doing a fucking high five, like, yep, we don't know shit. He's right.
Glum shit-o.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of like it exists in that this weird spectrum of, like, you know, it. Not everyone's going to be, obviously, like, a diehard Star Wars fan going through this, but for the ones who are, they are rewarded with that knowledge, and it's one of those, like, you know, who are you making this narrative for? And in the end, if it's passable enough to get for, you know, to get the people on board who are hardcore enough, at least the gameplay is solid enough to get the rest on board. Like, okay, this is just a great time. It doesn't really maybe matter as much if I understand all the nuances and the references and all that stuff for that. So it's kind of an interesting problem that they have. And on top of like it being like sort of like a prequel to like the most popular things that are known in Star Wars as well, it's kind of hard to see like where will this story go, because you kind of know where this is going to lead into. So how impactful can it be when it has to maintain a canon that they're managing behind the scenes for the IP?
I have a dumb question. Are the units, like, are they all bespoke characters, or are there like generic units?
There is generic units you can recruit, but if you're playing on like a lower difficulty or you're doing well in the game, you want to stick to the named units because they have additional perks on top of the standard specializations. Like, for example, the sniper I use, like one of the skills you could do with the sniper will give you stacks of like higher like hit percent chance, critical chance, stuff like that. But the one I used that was a named character also had an additional skill that was free to use, or pretty much free to use, that would stack on top of that and did a very similar thing. So you would have both running at once and they would stack, and it would be like you could just hit from across the map, no problem, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to like micromanage and use only specific types of classes, you could just use generic units.
And I don't know how much this applies to you, Jason, because you do have a supercomputer of sorts, but it seems like...
Oh, it runs, you know, it runs terribly.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it runs terribly. Like, the frame pacing is absolutely dreadful. It's not good. It's not good. I played it, like, 50-50 on my desktop and, like, my MSI Claw, like, handheld. And I'd say that, funnily enough, if you're like running at the lowest settings and you're capping at 30 FPS, the frame pacing there was okay. It was relatively fine.
At lowest settings, 30 FPS cap, the frame pacing, you know, I could live with it. And then anything else.
Yeah, it's performance is rough. I would say if you're an XCOM fan, this comes at no surprise. It's a bit of a technical mess because both XCOM 1 and 2 had similar issues at their launch. So it's like nothing new. But if you're not sure, I'd say give it a few weeks, maybe a month or two, and then play it, because maybe it'll be in a much better technical state at that point if we're lucky.
Yeah, I think that's my line of thinking right now. It's the good old, well, I'll just wait for a patch and sit off, which is becoming an... It's been common, but it's becoming increasingly more common these days, unfortunately. That there's definitely a list, a mental list inside my head that's like, I'll just, wait for a patch and see how this game is doing. Maybe half a year from now. maybe a little bit less. We'll see.
What's the last time we had like a technical review or like maybe even like a Mikhail look in? We're like, yep, this game runs great. What was the last time we're like, this game runs great?
I'm like thinking. I'm sure there's a recent one, but I don't remember.
Honestly, the only one I have, like, and it's only because it's fresh in my mind, is the Trails second chapter demo. Like,
that's
pretty damn well. And the first chapter ran pretty damn well. I'm like, all right, you know, so that's maybe it's that. Just relative to the competition, it's that.
I was about to say, no, it's like, no, it wasn't Brigadine Abyss. We talked about that last week. It wasn't that.
Nope.
Let's see. Steins Gate reboot had issues on deck with no voices. Yeah, I mean, it ran as it should, but with a weird glitch. Beast of Reincarnation is Beast of Reincarnation. You're right. I'm scrolling down Mikhail's like features. I'm like, I don't know. I remember one or two things that he's complaining about in each of these.
Neo 3 on PC ran okay relative to the other Team Ninja PC ports, but even then it was just okay. It wasn't amazing. So
that's a good question, and that's sadly not an easy answer.
Nope.
Damn,
you got it. On Zero Company, like, I'm curious just about like the tactical variety in terms of like mission objectives or map design or unit limitations, just in terms from like looking at it from an RPG lens, in terms of that. From that focus, like, what did you feel about how the game executed on that front?
It feels really good, especially when you take advantage of specific units' abilities on specific maps. It's always fun. It's always fun when you see a big group of enemies right next to a ledge and you throw a concussion grenade and watch them all fall off one by, like, at the same time. It's like, oh, thank God. That saved me, like, 15 minutes having to whittle all of them down. They're just gone. Mm-hmm. They're just gone. Especially if there were units at a lot of HP, it's like, can't beat gravity.
I've been playing the Neo 3 DLC. Not a whole lot to talk about it, but I feel the same when I'm playing like on New Game Plus or Plus Plus, and I get an enemy to fall off a ledge. I'm like, thank God I don't have to fight that guy. He's just dead though.
I think at this game, at least, I'm curious to see where Bitreactor goes from here. What's their next project after it? It seems like this was a really strong debut title for them. Obviously, they still have the technical issues they need to work through, but overall, it's a solid game. You know, we've seen Star Wars games that were much, much, much worse. And this one seems to be, hey, this is a good shot of like, hey, what would XCOM, what would Star Wars look like? And this seems to be a damn good shot at it. And I'm curious to see what Bitreactor does. If they do make another strategy game, will it be tied to an IP, or what can they do when they're not tied to the limitations of working with an established IP already? So it's a very promising start for the studio. It seems like it's been at least performing sales-wise pretty strongly, it seems like, within these first few days. See where it goes from. Anything you wanted to add on, James, on Star Wars Zero Company that we haven't touched upon?
You can have a conversation with a Gonk droid. That's pretty
okay.
was this Bitreactor's debut title? Like, I'm looking at their Steam list.
I think. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, if I click on Bitreactor on Steam, it takes me to the EA page, which is not helpful. But yeah, it seems like it might be.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. If you get print copies of Game Informer, you'll see James's writing there on the next issue. So that's actually honestly pretty cool. I'm actually kind of jealous. But also on Game Informer's website as well, you can check out James's writing there. We'll probably go ahead and put a link in the show notes for that. But also we do have Scott's review on our site, rpgsite.net. I didn't write here if. Oh yeah. So Mikhail, I'll speak for him very briefly. He just wrote. Star Wars Zero Company is unplayable on Steam Deck. So sounds like the way that it's been described, I'm not utterly surprised. But if you want to know more of the direct comparisons and screenshots on the PC handhelds, you can look up Mikhail's feature on that as well.
Mikhail's, I think on release day, yeah, he's, I think he showed us some screenshots on the site, but on the Steam Deck, he showed us the screenshot that was like just a pretty blurry mess. And then you see at the top left counter, FPS 18. Like, yep, this seems playable.
Yeah, like if you're on like a non-Steam Deck handheld, it is playable enough. I can attest to that, like personally, but
Oh,
it
right, yeah,
does.
you did.
You need to. You can't do it on a Steam Deck. Like if you have an ROG Ally, if you have an MSI Vive, if you have a Lenovo Legion, God, all of these names are fucking terrible, man. But yeah, actually ran relatively quite well on mine. So yeah.
If you were to name, if you were a PC hardware manufacturer and you're making a portable, what would you call it? Just call it like the port, the portable. I don't know. Something very simple. Don't need to get X gamer cred up in here.
Well, definitely runs games good portable. That's it.
There
That's
you
the
go.
name.
I ordered just because I wanted to have it before Tokyo Game Show, like a 1X player, which that's just the name of the company, and they're very straightforward with how they name theirs. This is the third main version of the handheld, so it's called the 1X Player 3.
Damn, look
That's too
at
efficient.
that.
You gotta call it series or S and X.
It's like the Sony strategy, like, well, here's our follow-up to the next PlayStation. It's called the PlayStation 4. Holy
There you go.
shit. What the fuck? Meanwhile, fucking Nintendo and Microsoft are like, we named it the Xbox One. Wait, what do you mean? You know, like the one, the only one in your living room.
The
What? I'll
all-in-one
call it the
gaming entertainment system.
Xbone.
Right, James?
I said I'll call it the Xbone. That's what
There you
everyone
go.
actually called it. It was really funny though when, like, really early on in that generation, you could tell when people like were contractually obligated to call it the Xbox One all-in-one
Oh
entertainment system.
yeah, I that was so funny for a bit when people had to call it that.
We just call it in our household, our Xbox One is our Blu-ray player because we don't have another one. And we just call it the X-Bone. It's just, we don't even think about it. It's not as a joke. It's like, what's in the X-Bone? Oh, it's this one. Oh, put it in the
I love that.
right. So that is our talk on Star Wars Zero Company. I did have earmarked here if we wanted to talk about it. We could talk about the second chapter demo. This is Trails in the Sky second chapter, obviously releasing in the middle of September next month. James has been playing it. I've been playing it. Obviously, we'll leave kind of like our full thoughts for, that game's going to just release in 3 weeks, so we can talk about it then. But I don't know. I've been playing through. It's a really meaty demo. It's basically like the first 10 or 15 hours worth, which is more than the first game's prologue demo was already not, 5 hours. It was not bad, but I'm surprised they just decided to throw in all of, is it all of chapter one? I'm not done with it yet, so I don't
It's
know.
all of chapter one, so it's honestly closer to 15 or 20 hours if we're being real here. Like,
Yeah.
especially if you do all of the side quests, or if you're playing a Trails game and you're not doing the side quests, what
What
are
are
you
you
doing?
doing? So, I don't know. It's like it feels like coming home. I enjoy this story arc before everything got really big. Not that it goes not interesting places, but it's fun to just go back to a time that things are a little bit more quaint. But obviously, we know anyone who's played this knows that it goes places. I'll keep it at that, just for newcomers. But I don't know. I think it's Trails in the Sky first chapter was really well received last year. I think a lot of us who revisited the series had pretty high opinions of it, more or less. Second chapter seems like it's in the same ballpark. It's doing a lot of neat things. It is fun to see the kind of the translation pass, like now that the new localizing team has had time to like get invested in the series, and we already talked about their kind of final patch for first chapter to kind of realign the terminology with the XSEED and the NIS games. So really cool to kind of see that.
I'm curious, have you guys
I'll
been playing
say
on English or Japanese voices?
I have been playing on English. I
Awesome.
like most of the voices, except I just don't really care for Estelle's English voice. And it's I can't really point to like a good reason. You just kind of sometimes things just don't jive with you. And it's just not jiving. But the rest is as it's on par with everything else in the series. It's not a step up, it's not a step down. It's kind of what.
Okay. Anything that's like gameplay wise, like, I mean, you know, that like stuck out to you like immediately? It's like, hey, like, wow, this is like so much better than it was in first chapter. Or is it like still maintaining like the good solid foundation that they?
It's maintaining a solid foundation. I guess I'll say on normal, I'm still, it's a, oh, go ahead, James, you first.
I was just saying, like, it's basically maintaining the same foundation for now. But again, it's like first 15, 20 hours. And yeah, who knows how long, like, I know like first chapter was a little bit longer than FC was. So I'm very curious, like, what my overall play time is going to be once the full game is out and I've played through everything, especially considering there is like new missions and whatnot. So.
And I'll say, like, I'm playing on normal and I'm even having like a decent challenge. Like, it's not just turn off your brain. Like, you actually have to like think and use buffs and impede enemies, and which sounds like very basic 101, but some of the entries in the series on normal don't push you to do that. So it's fun to be like, oh, I actually have to think a little bit on normal difficulty. So
I'm being a little bit mean, but there are definitely some later era series where like you even if you're playing on hard, you could put on a blindfold and still play through those games.
Yeah, so on normal, it's like, oh, I actually can't do this highway monster bounty right away. I have to like go do the other things first so I can get my, you know, improve my kit a little bit, and then I'll come back. Like, it's rare that I've had to do that. So I think they hit a good balance. I will say though that, like, I think I'm suffering a little bit from a little bit of burnout. This is just a personal thing because I've been playing the English releases for like the last 3.5 years, mm-hmm. and the cadence has been pretty high. Like Daybreak 1 to 2 to Beyond the Horizon to first chapter to second chapter to even like Cold Steel 4 and like was Reverie. It's like 9 games in 6 years or something like that. Like, and I feel like, all right, another one of these, huh? So I feel like I'm actually kind of glad that on the Japanese side that there's been a few years since
happy for
what
you.
It'll be nice to like, I'm feeling okay with second chapter right now, but I'm glad that it's not this and a game past what was Farewell Azumaria, whatever. Yeah, that's it, Kai. I was like, what's the term? So but I think that just kind of comes with the territory of having played so many games in series. It's not any individual game's fault. Just many of these games have a very similar footprint. It's like, oh, go around the town, go to the shops, click on all the bubbles, you know, go through. And I guess it's still better than hidden books. Like, did you talk to this one person at this one fortress between these two story events and out of your way? Like, well, at least you have an icon that tells you to, you should talk to this person. And like, I wouldn't take that back, but I'm enjoying my time with it. I'm primarily playing through the demo just because September is so crowded. So any like leg up that I can get, I'm like, all right, I can at least have 15 or 20 hours under my belt into this game ahead of its formal launch. But I think it's going to be really good. I think it'll be received pretty well.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, technically, if you're already invested in the series, you don't have to play the remake, so you already know what's in them. Like, it's not like, yeah. if you're playing through them for just narrative value and like because you don't know what to expect next, you're only playing these remakes if you're returning, like, as a returning fan, you're only coming back to these series to these remakes to see what they've updated, to see, like, you know, what they look at, prettier graphics, modern expectations, and modern presentation, you know. But you're not going into that for like new narrative value. So there's definitely some people, it's like, okay, after Kai, after Trails Beyond the Horizon, like, I'll just wait for the next one. These remakes, you know, it's cool that like new fans are getting onboarded onto the series with these, and you know, for returning fans, obviously will enjoy them. But the wait for the next, like, narrative advancements of the series, in that respect, I could see it getting a little bit grueling, to the point that, like, you know, if they don't say anything about it, like, this December with the Falcom shareholder investor meeting or whatever, and there's another year that there's no new one of these, I can see people getting a little bit frustrated, especially because next year is also the year where, hey, this might be the final time you'll see a physical release for the series.
Oh yeah. And it's more of a first chapter comment than a second chapter comment, but I'm still like impressed and glad and almost thankful that they showed restraint on the remake. Because I remember when it was first announced, like, oh no, what character cameos are they going to add, or what things could they possibly do? And they didn't really do any of that. They played it.
They did commit a cardinal sin. I will admit, yeah. they commit the Evo, the Evolution cardinal sin with the opening movie of Second Chapter.
Oh, I don't. Where, okay, like I'll be honest, I just haven't watched it. Like I don't.
It definitely does the Evolution thing of like the rearrangement of the song kind of goes a little bit too ham compared to like the more eloquent way that the original was presented, along with a lot of the new scenes in it. There's a lot of new scenes in that opening movie that basically spoil big moments of the game. If you've never seen it before, it's like it's such a spoiler fest, and that's something that the Evo versions of the games were very notorious at doing.
So smash that A button until you get to the title screen. Or is it at the title screen, or is it when you start a new game? I don't remember. Because I smashed my A button and didn't see it.
Still, don't watch the opening movie. That's my advice.
There you go. Close your eyes.
Go watch the original opening movie. You'll have a better time.
Before we go jumping into Gamescom news, we do have a handful of other like feature articles up on the site. And James, I believe your name's on at least two of them. I don't know if this was at a specific Sega Atlas event, but you had features up about Persona 4. And you had something about, I guess it's not Sega Atlas, about Dragon's Dogma 2. But those are the two features that you put up over the last week.
Yes, I'm putting up some stuff for Respect 2 for Sega Atlas stuff. There was a Sega Atlas Gamescom at Halo or pre-Gamescom event in LA last week. And it was actually a pretty significant event. They booked an entire like conference room and had a bunch of different demo sets setups. And they had, it was like a several hour thing. They had a bunch of people there. I saw Mega 64 in my session, which was interesting.
The OG.
Yeah. So yeah, I got a chance to play the same Stranger in Heaven demo that Josh checked out at Summer Game Fest. Didn't write up anything because it's the same demo. There's no reason to. I got to check out Crazy Taxi, but I'm not writing up anything for that because Alex is writing up and has like an interview with the team that he's putting up for Respec. I played Warhammer 40K, well, Total War Warhammer 40K, which I'm writing up something about, which was neat. Alien Isolation 2, which I am not writing up anything about because that demo was kind of nothing. It was very, very, very short. And I don't know what to write about that one. But the main thing that I played that I focused on was they had Persona 4 Revival playable. Very obviously meant to be the same build that's at Gamescom. So there were two demo segments that are going to be publicly playable or were publicly playable at Gamescom, which is the Persona Awakening scene and the fight against Yosuke's shadow is the first demo. And then the second one is exploring Yukiko's castle and up to the fight against Chie's shadow. And then not publicly playable, but was playable here. They loaded us into a save file that let us and just let us play for a couple of in-game days. And it's like, okay. So got to actually see some of the social links, got to actually explore the explore Inaba a bit, stuff like that. It feels really, really good. I know that some people have been upset that they've confirmed that they're not completing that like unfinished Yosuke like thing, whereas like he was originally like romanceable in the beta before and they never finished a night. But like I understand why people are upset about that, and you're like perfectly valid, but it does feel, at least, what's the best way of putting this, unlike with Persona 3 Reload, where the whole reason why people wanted a Persona 3 remake was because there was two separate versions of Persona 3 and neither of them were definitive, at least Persona 4 Revival is based off of Golden, which means that you don't have to worry about whether or not this remake is going to be quote-unquote definitive, or if people are missing anything major by playing this versus any other version of the game. Like, obviously, if you want to play the original, PS2 original is still there. The Vita version and the HD version of the Vita version is still there. But at least in terms of this remake, you aren't explicitly missing anything from playing this.
And yeah, Persona 3 had the more clear-cut, you know, like, content, you know, differences where, you know, like a branching difference almost where, you know, some people might prefer the original Persona 4 over Golden. But yeah, it's a bit of a different, you know, structuring in terms of how the changes were made and what's in each game.
Yeah, and like visually this looks like the presentation is just incredible. I'm super excited to see the full game. Honestly, it's funny writing up a preview for this and being like, I played Persona 4 to Golden. I basically seen everything I need to see from this preview to know that it's like, yeah, I'm going to have a really good time with this remake. It's really weird having a preview where instead of being like, yeah, I got to wait and see, it's like, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure, like 99% sure what this remake is going to land at. Even though it's like still 4 or 5 months away. Well, no, 5, 6 months away, something like that.
I will say that I haven't been in like the middle of the conversation about the Yosuke romance, but I saw the headline. I think it was Games Radar, where the dev said like, yeah, you know, we thought about it, but if we made Yosuke romanceable, we'd have to do it for the other male characters. I'm like, says who? Like, you could make that decision. Like, that's not.
It was a pretty poor answer. It was a pretty poor answer from Wanda. I'm not gonna lie.
It was a bad answer. It was like a bad
answer. It felt like an answer. He thought about it there for 5 seconds and then said something. I'm not saying that was actually what it was going through his mind, but it just feels like something you would say if you didn't have like actually a proper answer to that. You could have said like, you know, we wanted to stay faithful to the original released version of what we put out. That could have been a more reasonable answer than making up a problem in your mind to not address that. Just funny. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you where there's a lot of like interesting things that they've added to this version that I'm still mixed on. I'm very interested to see how it is full game. Like, as you said, it does seem exciting that like all the additions and all, and definitely the visual presentation overhaul that they put where it's, I like that they're going for different motifs in between these remakes where Persona 3 had like when its menus is very like blue water, sort of like, you know, diving into like the Sea of the Soul type of motif with its menus, while this one is more orange, more yellow, matching the motifs of Persona 4, but it's more like homey in a way, more rural, more like
the old school like television like dial.
Yeah,
a lot of the menus.
Yes, that's a very nice visual touch that they. Like they sort of got there with the original release, but it was like it's very abstract and vague because like when you're going through like the battle menu in the original, like there is a yellow circle that does have like a line that switches that is supposed to resemble a dial in some respects, but it was so abstract that's like that's not something that you would really pick up on doing that. While this one, it's much more like
overt.
Yes, overt. That's cool. I'm interested, you know, seeing how this all develops. It's I wonder what they do. Like, I don't know. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm just like wonder. I'm always wondering about the next. Where do they go from here? They run out of the modern era personas now.
Say something along the lines of, I guess we should do Persona 1 and 2.
Yeah, I think Wada did say something like that. Like, oh, might as well should do it, but. I wonder if they're actually doing it or not. And I don't know if they are doing it, am I ready for them to show that? Like whenever they show it and I know these games, I hope I'm excited more than pissed off, which is a weird thing to say because it's like, I'm more excited usually than I'm not, but I'm usually critical of Atlus because I love Atlus. That's kind of where I've landed these days.
I get that. That's how I feel about like Falcom. Which I remember when I wrote about Kyoto Zandu like a month and a half ago. Like some people were like, "Oh, why are you so like? Stop being mean." It's like I'm not being mean. I'm being critical. There's a difference.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a common thing we all share. Where like we definitely we're so critical of the things that we love because we love them so much and we want to hold them to a higher standard. We want it to be better. And you know, that's just being human, you know? So I try to convey that to people the best that I can. It's like, I say this because I really, really love the...
James, you also had a feature up here about a preview opportunity for Dragon's Dogma 2. The title of your feature says that seems to imply that you kind of wish you saw more, or you weren't sure like how to come away from your preview opportunity on this one.
Yeah, I had about an hour of Dragon's Dogma 2 Dark Arisen, but it's like that just wasn't enough to get an idea of what the gameplay loop of this expansion is going to feel like. It was one of those things where it's like, yeah, you're showing me individual things, but you're not giving me the chance to really digest them, if that makes sense.
Right. The eternal curse of previewing an RPG game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they uploaded like a preview on their official YouTube as well that I watched a little bit earlier. They were facing off like some dragon in the Blizzard in the new region as a sorcerer, and like you can take away like you can now, you know, as they announced earlier, you can now equip up to 6 skills, and there's like a new magic barrier for like the sorcerer, for example, and then after that they showed off a little bit of like the relic system, but it's one of those things like it's hard to like connect the dots because Dragon's Dogma 2 is such a systematically driven game that like you can't really show off anything in isolation to have it make sense because everything is so linked to one another that like the only way that it makes sense is when you see the bigger picture of like how does this actually affect things in that regard, because it's hard to like, and I hope they do address this in Dark Arisen too. I'm going to call it Dark Arisen 2 from now on because I don't want to do DD2 Dark Arisen every time. But where I really am interested in like what the scope of this new region is, and will it like address at least some of my personal qualms and maybe the qualms of others of like having like interesting enemy variety and formations as you're traversing through this new region. I want things to like feel threatening but not feel samey as I'm like going through them. In that regard,
nope. Same two goblins over and over again. No, but yeah, that was one of the chief concerns of the original game.
But it was like one of those. It's just like I'm seeing like some variation, but it's like, is it going to be enough? And it's like I can't in the span of an hour. And like I'm assuming most of those new enemies are going to be in those like Lost Rite dungeons. And it's like, what's the scope of those? I was kind of able to see one, but not really, I don't think. And it's just, there's a lot they're promising and it sounds promising, but I just wasn't able to see anything really.
If anything, I think the big thing that you can come away with is like, it does feel novel and fresh because you are in this new region. It is snowy. It's not something, it's like, it's a biome that you didn't really see in the original Dragon's Dogma 2. You had the forest and you had like a desert area. So now, like, I wonder if, like, the weather is something you have to really be considerate of because, like in that boss fight that they showed in that preview on their YouTube channel, like, there was a blizzard going on against this dragon, and there was sometimes it was so obfuscated behind that I was like, you couldn't really tell what it was doing if you were staying too far away from
it. Not just for Dragon's Dogma 2, but I don't think Dragon's Dogma 1 really had a snow biome. It seems kind of like it might be new between the two games. Yeah. So it's kind of neat. We had a couple other previews up on the site, or one preview and one interview. The next one was from Hayes, talking about the recently announced remake for Heroes of Might and Magic 3 from Ubisoft. Hayes went into this preview basically coming from the perspective of a game that he played as, you know, young, well, when he was younger, just endlessly, you know, until 4 in the morning. His words, not mine. And then talking about how the remake felt faithful, how it was the same addictive gameplay loop he came to you know and really kind of love and be nostalgic for. The only caveat that he had was he thought that from what he could see so far, that he felt that maybe the visual identity was a little bit more genericized into just kind of generic high fantasy, that the original I'm speaking his words because I've not played the original, had kind of a specific unique flair to it that he just says, like, he'd like to see more, to see that they can maintain it in the new visual identity for the remake. But he wrote up a pretty thorough, very kind of heartfelt preview for a game that he's really excited to return to, slated for next year for the Heroes of Might and Magic 3. So give that a read if you get a chance. Mikhail was able to interview a group that I'm not familiar with, SNEG, S-N-E-G. I'm actually not familiar with the work that they do, but they work on preserving classic games on PC, kind of in like the same vein as GOG, I presume. He interviewed their co-founder, Artem Shuiko, and talked to us about classic games, about their role in the gaming space, talking about preservation, of course, which of course is a kind of a long-standing topic that as we go into AI ethical concerns, or, you know, an all digital future, all those things, this topic just becomes more and more prevalent. So maybe the next time we get Mikhail on the podcast, he can speak at length about a very thorough, pretty long interview that he did with the group over at SNEG up on the site. So if that's something that sounds interesting to you, definitely give that interview a read over on the site from Mikhail. And I hope we get him on the podcast to talk about it soon, because I just want to kind of pick his brain about how the interview came to be and, you know, what his takeaway was from it. With that, we'll go into news. Like we said at the top of the podcast, we are basically going to touch on the major rundown for all of the headlines that came out of Gamescom, so we can kind of clear those off the plate, get them all, you know, documented and talked about before we go into PAX and TGS. I wasn't quite sure what to put in as major news here, and I believe this news actually predated Gamescom just slightly, so we'll talk about it first. Who here has played Terranigma? Anyone?
I have, but it's been a very long time since I played it.
Maybe this is where we need Chow. I bet Chow's played it front to back. I don't know that for sure, but I'm just guessing. So Terranigma, I associate it with the intro little song bit to our podcast. It used to be Terranigma for the longest time because it was a favorite of the previous Tetracast team. We did swap it out with an original piece, of course. Yeah, he says hi. Okay, cool. So hi, Zach, if you're listening. You're probably not listening, but if you are, we'd love to, you know, stay in touch. Glad you got to catch up with James. But yeah, Terranigma is going to be coming to PlayStation 4, 5, Switch 1 and 2, Xbox and PC in early 2027. It is going to be kind of repackaged, not really a remaster or a remake or anything like that, but re-released on modern consoles by Clear River Games. They released a Rebirth trailer showing, you know, hey, what is this game? Talking a little bit about its history in a very like trailer format, and how they're planning to make it, you know, newly available for modern audiences. And Terranigma is one of the rare cases, I think it's relatively rare, where it released in Japan in 95, released in Europe in 96. It never got an official release in the US. So I'm actually looking at our little sidebar here. It's just original release date, Japan 95, Europe 96. America 2027. Just don't see that as often these days, but cool that it's going to have an official release. I did see something. I didn't follow this exactly, so chime in if you saw this. I guess they posted a trailer with a remix of one of the song's themes that they didn't have explicit permission for, so they had to take the trailer down and put it back up. It was very strange and kind of a bad look, but the trailer is back up now.
Yeah, there's a fan, like maybe like a decade ago, like uploaded like a rearrangement of one of its tracks. And I was like, it was really good. Don't get me wrong, but that's the one that they decided to include in the original upload and reveal of this trailer. And obviously, it's like that's kind of fucked up that like you never reached out to this fan who did a rearrangement of that. And it's like, I who knows what happened behind the scenes, but it seems like they re-uploaded it and that issue has been resolved. I don't know what exactly happened with that fan since then behind the scenes with them. Hopefully, they gave them like a heartfelt apology at the very least. On that, but yeah, that was like kind of a big flub on their part when more people got rid of that once that fan, like, you know, points like, hey, what's going on, you know? So
yeah,
hopefully that was the last time, the last flub that this will ever happen for this thing.
Yeah, it's very bad timing for a flub and very kind of a bad look, but it's what happened. But
can you imagine, like, this fan who obviously loves Terranigma and, you know, a while ago made a rearrangement of one of their tracks, they hear the news, what, Terranigma is getting to new platforms? Let me check out the trailer. And then, like, wait a minute. This sounds wrong.
I can only, yeah, man. Hopefully that fan is still very excited and has hopefully mended their, you know, hopefully the team behind this mended their relationships with them. Not, it shouldn't be, you know, the fan mended relationships. No. Hopefully that thing is resolved. So yeah, but it's but like you mentioned, Brian, this is coming early next year for pretty much every platform, every modern platform.
And Clear River Games did say in their little press release that they are working with the art director, or the original, Kamui Fujiwara, who is going to be providing new key art and game design. So that'll be pretty cool that they are working with some of the original creative team for that. And this will just be cool just for, like, you know, obviously a gap for many of ours. Either, you know, we weren't around when it was released, or, you know, we were too young to import or know how to get hands on it if we're here in the States. So I definitely will play this when it comes out, just to kind of fill out my, like, RPG history a little bit and just, you know, see what this was and what it meant.
Yeah, it's cool that it's like it's getting re-released on, like, it's accessible once again. You know, we were just talking about preservation earlier with Mikhail's interview. Once again, another clear example of, like, hey, preservation's important, especially so because a good chunk of the Western world doesn't even know this game exists, to be honest, like in the mainstream, yeah, for sure.
And it is getting a GOG release, or it is planned for a GOG release. So that's, you know,
yes,
out of all the major players, that's the best case you can hope for. You know, the best case is, you know, that it's, you know, open source, but GOG release is pretty damn good, and they do a great job with their preservation program and all that. I put together a lot of headlines here related to news coming out of CD Projekt for The Witcher. So I think these are all at Gamescom. I actually don't know which of these headlines were made in which order, but I kind of bundled them all together here. So we'll have a little Witcher section here in the middle of the cast. The most impending news and the biggest news, I think, coming out of Gamescom is that we got details for the upcoming Witcher 3 Wild Hunt Remastered, which is, of course, also a free upgrade on PC. We got a date for all of that. It is coming September 29th. We got a DLC for the previously announced new DLC, Songs of the Past. Is Songs of the Past also September or no?
No.
I didn't actually parse that through. I didn't think so. I just wanted to check. Yeah. So September is the remaster or the update on PC. But we did get a trailer for Songs of the Past for next year. They talked about Switch 2 gameplay for the upcoming remaster for Witcher 3.
Yeah, I believe it's actually getting like a native Switch 2 release and Battle.net release on September 29th.
I didn't know Battle.net. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. So from what I understand, like there is actually like a Switch 2 version, like native version
coming. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anyone's going to do that, that's what CD Projekt, you know, they seemed really proud of what they're able to do with, you know, Witcher 3 on Switch 1 originally. That was like the biggest swing there. And then Cyberpunk on Switch 2. So yeah. And then they talk a little bit about, you know, what the performance targets for Wild Hunt Remastered on PS5 Pro, how it's going to target 60 frames per second with ray tracing. And then they also do, of course, talk about the upcoming Witcher 4. Basically just a discussion about a release window. It is targeting a 2028 release, which to me, I read that and I'm like, that's not surprising. That's kind of what I would have guessed if I wasn't told otherwise. But just to kind of know that it's still being worked on and still in the pipes.
Yeah, with this remastered release of Witcher 3, it's also important to note, like, starting the day that it was announced, which was August 25th, both the previous expansions of, what was it, Blood and Wine and Hearts of Stone, they're going to be free for all owners of Witcher 3. Because the remastered version will have those as part of its, you know, package natively, so there's, like, it's released for free for everyone. So when you pick up The Witcher 3, you know, you'll get those expansions for free, which is cool. Part of, like, you know, the Witcher series has gone through this, undergone this, but there's a lot of, like, things revamped with this remaster release, like the skill tree revamp is, like, I think it's, like, via skill points now, not, like, level-gated stuff. I'm trying to remember exactly what they showed off at the Red Streams. There's the transmog. They're working with some. I apologize. I totally forgot like the name of this modder, but they're working with this modder, the modder that works on the Witcher 3 games, to include some popular mods like getting rid of like the inventory weight, stuff like the weight limit stuff, adding boat races, and some other features to them.
I love the two extremes. Like a mod that subtracts inventory limit. Okay, a mod that adds boat races. Like, oh, okay.
that's what really, like, stick out of my head. Yeah, I mean, people who want to dig into that, like through like CD Projekt's red streams, like I'm sure there's other social media posts that like summarized everything that they've revealed on them. But there's a pretty substantial like free update that they're giving people. I think it's worth noting that I believe this update, this remastered update, is only coming to the PS5 and Xbox Series versions on consoles. I don't know if it's coming to the previous gen versions. Because they only mentioned the free upgrade for the platforms that remastered is coming out on.
Yeah, you're right. They've only mentioned PS5 and Series.
Yeah. So
the only other small thing is that the MSRP, like people who like track all the prices, like Witcher 3 is now on Steam for $50, which is more than it's been for a while. But I kind of get it because now it packages more in it and it's got an update pending. But like, for some people, that was something worth noting. Like, hey, you know, this used to be on sale for $10, you know, and now it's $50. It's like, yeah, it is. And like, I don't know. To me, I read that and I don't really flinch. But you know, the MSRP for Witcher 3 is now higher than it was. That's just kind of the statement. Yeah. So,
and I'm sure the remastered will get sales, you know, time as well, especially before Witcher 4, as they get more people to try and play through that. And then the teaser for the new expansion coming next year, Songs of the Past, you know, obviously new location. They brought back like the chain weapon that was, I believe, in Witcher 1, which is fun.
It's been so long.
It wasn't in the actual
game. Actual game, yeah. Movie. Yes. And the...
Which tells me that Witcher 1 remake is probably going to have that chain in it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The one that's being developed by Fool's Theory. And that's true. They also mentioned that there's going to be new romances, romanceable, at least one new romance that you could have in Songs of the Past, which is funny because it's like, well, Geralt's like a married man by the end of the last expansion. You can make Geralt, you know, a fucking cheater if you want to.
I'm like, who else is there in the series? I'm like, there's Dandelion. And... That's all I can think of. It's been forever. Like, who else would like be a candidate for that? So,
and you know, okay, good on CD Projekt Red. I also like one very miscellaneous thing, but CD Projekt Red related was, unfortunately, there seems to have been some theft going on at Gamescom. There's been some missing equipment at some booths that were left there overnight. Obviously, you know, when Gamescom closes, people don't want to take down their entire booth, and usually just like, you know, it's closed down. They expect security to handle it. Unfortunately, there seems to be some theft going on. It's
especially bad because the reported thefts were in the business area that very explicitly there was supposed to be security around.
Yeah. I don't know to what extent, but it seems like CD Projekt Red will be helping at least some of these people who got stolen from replace their stolen equipment. So, you know, good on them in that regard. Because it seems like the official Gamescom staff, at least the head management, they're not really doing much about it to recompensate those affected.
Yeah, there's been a lot. There's been a whole conversation now about how, man, Gamescom is kind of trying to sweep this under the rug because it doesn't look good for Cologne, Germany.
Yeah.
I've heard multiple like indie studios or smaller teams were affected like significantly as well. So it's really unfortunate that happens.
Yeah.
So I think that covers the Witcher news. So cool, the remaster coming out at the end of next month, Songs of the Past next year, and then Witcher 4 presumably the year after that. So eating good. And then I guess, you know, always the Witcher 1 remake somewhere in there as well. So we'll see when we hear more news on that one. One thing that Kite was able to cover at the anniversary stream from Marvelous, talking about you know, their upcoming projects. Two short little teaser trailers for the upcoming Story of Seasons entry and for Rune Factory 6. So he was able to get both of those video clips embedded into the site post over at rpgsite.net, so they don't have to watch them on Twitter or X if you don't want to. But just showing that, yep, those games are in the works from that team, and here's a little bit of a sneak peek of what they might look like.
I'll be honest, I did not know you could embed Twitter videos like this in a post the way that Kite did. I'm like, oh, this is the first time I've seen that. I don't know if there's like a recent feature that like the Twitter/X like supported, but like I'm just seeing it the way that he did it for the first time. I'm like, oh, that's cool. It looks very neat and eloquent, and you don't have to like do like a whole post for it. So that caught me off guard.
And you can watch it even if without being logged into Twitter. So bonus.
Thank God.
There were a lot of trailers coming out of Gamescom, and some we didn't even cover on our site. Like there was a new D&D Warlock like action adventure game that had a trailer that I watched, and I did not take to the trailer like theme or design at all. But it seemed like it got a lot of views, so like people are really excited for that one. I think it's just called Warlock. We got a new trailer for a couple new gameplay like showcases for the upcoming Fable. First, it was like an 18 or so minute like quest showcase, and then they followed it up like a day or so later with a combat showcase. I did not watch all of these front to back, but I did click through it. My girlfriend actually brought it up on the big TV because she played the original Fable and was interested in this one. I don't know. I think it looks promising in a lot of ways in terms of like the world design, just running through the city. I think the art direction looks pretty good. The voice acting seemed good. A lot of different quest dialogue options that seemed pretty intricate and seemed like they could actually like diverge the story quite a lot. Of course, it's hard to tell in a trailer. The only thing that I saw is that the ending of the gameplay trailer showed some combat footage that seemed a little bit kind of like stiff or maybe like early. Lack of hits done on the enemies.
Yeah, that's the thing that stood out to me is like there's like no reaction from the enemies in regards to like the attacks, and the animations look kind of not good.
Yeah, and they did follow that up with the combat trailer, and I did watch through this one as well. It showed like a different character going through like some catacombs with a hammer, like some auto crossbow action, a little bit of like some spell casting. And I think it showed it off a little bit more, but some of the same like stiff animations were there. I'm not saying that's like a death knell or anything like that, but when I was watching the quest gameplay, I thought this game looks really good. The combat gameplay just looked like it wasn't quite up to par. But I don't know how much of a focus that's going to be because I'm kind of a Fable, neophyte. So I don't know a whole lot about it, but they'll get some feedback from the trailers. But it's really cool to actually see like, for the longest time, Fable was just like, we got a CGI trailer every 18 months, and that was it. To actually see like a game being played is like, oh, there's actually something here.
There's a real game coming out. So,
crazy that I remember at the same E3 that they showed off Forza Horizon 4, I was like watching the Xbox event like right next to Alex, and he leaned over and told me that the next Fable is being developed by this team, and that was like almost a decade ago. I swear, almost a decade.
Yeah, I believe it.
And finally, it's coming out. It's like Jesus.
Yeah, this has been in development hell and back. And marketing RPGs is hard. Like, I mean, we'd like to stress, Fable's never been known for like being like, known for its combat, but it's been more for like the experience of like role playing, how you decide to like
right,
your
character
live your life in that game. So it's definitely like difficult to showcase that aspect like in small snippets. Like, they'll say a lot of stuff, but it's one of those things like you can really only piece together by playing it for yourself. So hopefully that this game delivers on that front. Brian, I'm curious. Well, I want to know, like, we've heard your thoughts, we heard a little bit of Jiren's thoughts. We want the girlfriend review of this. Like, what did your girlfriend think as a Fable fan?
She was watching the trailer, like, the quest trailer where the hero was, like, getting a beer for the guy sitting in the chair. And I just kind of, I think it was just kind of, like, lost interest. She, like, looked at her phone and looked away. I think it was a little slow. I don't know. I think it kind of comes with the territory trying to showcase, like, you have to showcase basic, simple quests. You can't show, like, interconnected, really intricate, layered things in a trailer. So
it's a lot of running around.
Catch a beer, pour it over his head, or give it to him because you want to, not burn your bridges. And hopefully, long term, like James was talking about with the other show preview events. You know, it's hard, really hard to show that stuff, like the long tenured stuff that really makes, you know, RPGs like this really shine, in my opinion. But I think it's really promising. And the gameplay, you know, I hope it kind of, you know, they have a time to tweak it up a little bit. But it might not also be the focus of the game, is if it's really about more like questing and dialogue and story weaving through, you know, a bunch of interacting characters. It might have a combat component to it. But if it's not the focus, then it could be fine. You know, that's not necessarily a death knell. I don't remember if this was Gamescom specifically or if it just coincided with it, but we got another, the second trailer, they're calling it, for the upcoming Final Fantasy VII Revelation. I guess this was at Gamescom opening night live. So, okay. This trailer, like, if you know anything about Final Fantasy VII, it's kind of what you expect. The only thing I thought was really interesting about this is that it does showcase a lot of the characters that were only very barely present at the tail end of Rebirth, like Vincent and Cid. But then it shows like all the weapons, you know, Ruby, Emerald, Ultima Weapon, that are, you know, major players in the later part of the story. But it almost showcases them like, I don't know, like Smash Bros. Incoming, like new challenger.
I didn't even think about that, but you're totally right. You're totally right.
Yeah. And they also have, like, part of the trailer is Rufus Shinra is giving like a speech to, you know, his subordinates, and that is kind of like the I watched it in English, the dialogue that's overplaying over the trailer. And I don't know if it's just like the voice direction or just that's what Rufus sounds like. It was just not good voiceover for the trailer, just to hear Rufus like drone on about the threat of the weapons off the coast of Midgar, and I'm just like, oh, this is
You know how it is for out of context quotes in a trailer, though.
They're just like, here's the single character speaking for an extended period of time. We're just going to take that voiceover and overplay it over not really related events. I guess they are related because talking about the weapons, but it just wasn't good. Like it was an in-game dialogue used as a trailer voiceover because it was convenient, is what it felt like.
They should just have like Sephiroth going cloud over the trailer.
There you go.
Everyone would.
Sephiroth was actually not very present in the trailer, so yeah. Like they actually kind of showed some restraint there. They focused on the weapons. Lots of like airships dropping bombs or shooting lasers and things like that. So very like Magitek sort of focus.
I'll never get the Smash that's coming out equivalent out of my head now when I watch this trailer.
Like it shows Ruby Weapon like screaming at the sky, and then it does like the comic book like whitewash where it's just like Ruby Weapon has joined the battle. It's like, oh, it's beat.
I would get the Smash Brothers in a heartbeat.
I guess the gameplay component there is that it seems like obviously those weapons were optional in the base game. It seems like they're not optional, and which makes sense. I think if I were in charge of designing, that's what I would have done too. So here's one of my favorite trailers because I don't know what to make of it. The long in development Showa American Story. I have no idea how to describe this game. We've talked it on the podcast before, but it did get a new trailer at Gamescom opening night live. This is hopefully going to be coming out next year, but I guess they haven't committed to that. When I was watching this trailer, this is the trailer that like combines like retro Japan and like 1960s Americana. I think it's like yeah, that sort
the
of
premise
fusion.
The premise is like, what if in the 1980s like Japan colonized the United States, and like the United States is like just a, like a region of Japan, or a, you know, like a subservient country or whatever of territory.
So when this trailer is only 90 seconds long, like very normal trailer length. And when I first started it, I'm like, wow, this trailer is like really stylish. Then it got kind of weird. Then like it had like a really bopping like vocal soundtrack to it, like some sort of like poppy song. I'm like, oh, this is kind of neat, grooving to it. And then it got weird again. But I'm like, this is just a fun trailer. Like, I go watch it. It's hard to describe on a podcast. The main character like pulls out like a Gurren Lagann drill and like starts jumping in the air and like drill dozering through piles of like I think zombies. And
the only reason I knew watching this trailer that this wasn't a Suda 51 joint was that the animations were too good.
Yeah, got a point there. What do you feel about the names Michael, Hero, and Bubba?
They attach someone to like an American flag and launch him like a rocket. Like, I don't understand this game.
It's
played just for how like weird it is.
Yeah, like very few games. It feels like it's like you genuinely feel like out of place, and like you just get the only thing that you can like think in your head is like it's bizarre. I don't know how else to tell you this, but it's just bizarre. You have to see it for yourself. Like every time they show this game, that's like pretty much my thoughts. And it's like, man, this game is just like, I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad. All I know is it's weird. It's bizarre. Yeah, and it's like, but it's like, it's compelling. Like it catches your eye.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, watch the new Showa American Story trailer from Gamescom. If you're going to watch any one trailer, it should be that one. A couple other updates for some previously announced games. Adam, you put together this this kind of news post. This is for the upcoming Final Fantasy Resonance, which, as far as I can tell, did not get a new trailer at Gamescom. It got a new trailer like 3 weeks ago. But they did do a big data jump about characters, of course, showing off their character art, about some of the story premise, about some of the gameplay systems. I don't know if there's any like the pretty long post that you can scroll down and see like 50 new screenshots or so, including like some of the cameo characters like Vaughn, Lightning, and Clive. Any other key takeaways from when you were putting this post together for Final Fantasy Resonance?
No, it's kind of just like a continuation of the previous post where it's like you're going to different like regions of the map. And there's like this update introduces two more kingdoms. One is the Zoldad Empire, and one is Mysidia, commonly seen in Final Fantasy. And those each have like an original character that you can recruit and join your team. Knowing that this game is based off of Brave Exvius, I'm not entirely sure how like the party setup works in terms of like how many characters do you get to choose from and ultimately like make a team around. And then you have like the Vision characters, which are more like, they're more like equipment, I think, than an actual character. And there's the like original Vision characters, like in this case, Amelia, Camille, Wilhelm, and a few others. And then there's like the cameo ones like Furion and Onion Knight. And those ones have like their own like properties and statuses and attacks. So that's where like the RPG component comes in, is you have all these characters and you have all these visions that you can like mix and match to some degree. And then there's espers and all that. This update also introduces, there's like a Colosseum, there's secret dungeons, there's Gilgamesh, and then there's Ultimate Weapon. So like,
oh yeah,
they literally call this in the update for completionists. So seems like not necessarily like story, you know, mainline things that you do, but like, hey, Gilgamesh is around and you can challenge him and make sure you're ready and all that.
All I know is that this character named Victoria got a lot of fans.
Is that the sexy witch?
Yes, the one with the big hat, the red hair.
Yeah.
Yes.
I specifically made that image one of the share images because I knew
it. That's just smart.
Yeah.
There's a science to posting.
We know our audience.
Here's a very quick one that I thought was just a funny little thing to follow up on. We had pretty much like the big kind of gameplay showcase for Blood of Dawnwalker last week. This week, I think they did have a launch trailer. I didn't explicitly put the launch trailer in the show notes. But one thing that the team at Rebel Wolves did say is that when they talked about the console targets and the PC performance, we mentioned last week that Blood of Dawnwalker was originally only going to ship on console with a 30 FPS mode and a 40 FPS mode. And apparently in the comments anywhere, that was not received too well. So they said, update, it will get a 60 FPS performance mode on day one. So it'll have 30, 40, and 60 modes on console.
Targeting 60 FPS is the key.
Through
line here.
Yep.
Keep expectations in check. I definitely not going to be like maintaining 60
FPS. It'll run on a Steam Deck, I'm sure.
I will say they did actually release a video showcasing like questing on the different performance modes. And it seems like, I guess, outside of towns, it looks like it probably will be pretty fine. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
This is why HD towns were hard.
I mean, people really want this to be good. I think that's a general sentiment I get around. It's like people really want them to do well or not, you know, genuinely.
And that's all I had for like specific
next week.
We can. It's literally a week away. So
have fun. I'll be at PAX.
I mean, you have fun too. I'll be at PAX. Go eat some sushi or whatever your favorite food type is.
Yeah, eating sushi at PAX. The life.
I've been to that Seattle Convention Center, and there's like three or four Starbucks, like within like a block. Have Starbucks.
All right, we'll go on to some dates here. A handful of dates here for upcoming releases and into next year. So I'll just kind of roll through them. The first one's kind of a different case for us. We don't usually cover these, but we've talked a little bit about GOG as really, they've been doing this for a while, but it's been more in the news, at least in our purview lately, like these one-click kind of total conversion or overhaul mods. They had one for Fallout London. They had one for Fallout New California. And then they have another one for owners of the Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind. Now on GOG, you can do a one-click install for Morrowind Tamriel Rebuilt. And I've never played Morrowind, so I looked into this a little bit. Apparently, it's basically like a fan-made expansion that doubles or more the size of the game. I didn't realize this, but I guess Morrowind doesn't take place on the continent of Tamriel. It takes place on an island. And this mod basically introduces a huge playable area on the mainland. So if you're a real big fan of Morrowind, and this also includes like a lot of under-the-hood stuff that helps the game play nicer, on modern on PCs. So this just seems like it could be really cool. When I was looking up stuff about Tamriel Rebuilt, like Reddit post about this mod back like 3 or 4 years ago. That's just how these mods kind of go, is that they take a long time to develop by, passion projects for groups of, many, many people. But just really cool to see this, and always willing to shout it out. And you do have to have the Morrowind Game of the Year edition on GOG, but it is also like heavily discounted aligned with the release of this mod. So I just thought that was pretty cool and worth shouting out. So I might actually grab it. Just don't have time to play it now, but just to kind of get it, on the list for, I don't know, whenever things quiet down next summer. Let's see. Mugenix was released earlier this year on PC in February. It's going to be releasing in just a couple weeks on console. It'll get Xbox Series, Switch 2, and PlayStation 5 versions on September 8th. Ion 2, it's the global launch. It's been out in Korea, but it's going to be launching in Japan, Europe, and North America on October 5th. It does have some sort of like preview access if you pay the Founders Pack on September 30th. So early October for Ion 2. Shadow of the Road finally has a release date. This is the game where every other trailer, every other month, I was just wondering like, when are we going to get a release window for this? Actually, not too far off Shadow of the Road. Going to be releasing on November 12th. This is PC only for now.
I kind of really want to play this. I'm so fascinated by a setup.
It's going up against GTA 6.
Well, this is my GTA 6, okay?
I think GTA 6 is the week after. But that's actually going to be interesting to see like what releases in November.
I know there's like a Barbie like re-released thing of like a certain like a collection of Barbie games and a Godzilla arena brawler.
I had that Godzilla Destroy All Monsters. I played that.
Right. Oh yeah, I played that. Oh,
yeah.
Fun.
Where was I? Another November date, but not a release date. Atelier Resleriana, Forgotten Alchemy, and the Polar Knight Liberator. Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the second mobile Atelier Resleriana game and the third total if you include the related but not identical console game.
There's only one Atelier Resleriana mobile game, so there is, there's only one. You might be thinking of like Atelier Online or something, which was like a previous Atelier series mobile game that shut down years ago. I'm trying to think if there was another one around there, but yeah, and then the one that came out last year for console was like a separate game, but taking place in the same world as this mobile game.
But this mobile game is shutting down, not to bury the lead, in Japan on November 25th.
Yeah, this previously shut down in global like March of last year. So this is it looks like they're able to going to be wrapping up the main story. At least they'll be able to finish the main story, at least in Japan over there. Obviously, never finished it in the global version. So we'll see if they'll ever revisit this world, or if they'll ever make like a true offline version of this game, because once again, the Red Alchemist and the White Guardian for console was not the same game as this game. It was a separate brand new story taking place in the same world and had some of the same cast participating in that story as this.
Yeah, I remember that part, but I guess I made it more complicated in my head. Like, were there two mobile games? No, there was only one. It was this one. Only one. Okay.
Yeah. I wonder what lessons they'll take out of this. We'll see.
I wonder if they'll ever release those HD remasters of the No Surge games.
Yeah. Yep.
Eruta, this is the action RPG that Chow actually talked about, released on PC late last year in November. He's spoken about it on this podcast. It's going to get its console version, PS5, Switch, and PS4 on December 10th.
This is a worldwide release, looks like, because it have multiple languages on it.
Mm-hmm. Path of Exile 2, which has been playable in early access for a while now, is going to get its 1.0 full release on December 11th, and that includes PS5 and Xbox in addition to PC.
They've been able to, like, you know, people have been able to play it for, like, since it's early access on December 2024, but they had to either get, like, an invite from someone who already was in it or, like, paid to get access to it. But now, with a full 1.0 full release, it's fully free to play. Obviously, there's optional microtransactions with, like, cosmetics and additional stash tabs for your inventory. Not like your character inventory, but like the one back into your hub, like to store items in. And obviously customized stash tabs for like gemstones and stuff for that. On that same day, they're gonna add in the duelist class and his ascendancies with it. So you'll have like the first sword wielding character coming to Path of Exile 2. They'll be along with this 1.0 full release, they'll be finally adding in the final two main story acts, because this game had went into early access and it only had three main story acts, and then you had to like replay those three main story acts like in hard mode to get to the end game. And then over the course of that, you know, but they continually updated early access and, you know, changed stuff. They added Act 4 last August, and then, you know, this game's gone through a lot of patching and then end game revamps stuff as they were trying to figure out, you know, what works and what doesn't for this game. So, you know, as it goes, the full main story will finally be wrapped up and fully completable on December 11th. I definitely have to revisit this game. Have to make a new character. It's fine.
Seems like a hard type of game to step away from and then come back in, because like, oh no, everything's balanced differently, or what was I doing, or what build was I rocking?
Yeah, and the game itself is sort of, it encourages, you know, making new characters. Was it like, you know, new seasons, new leagues? People do make everyone makes new characters for like new to engage with like new league mechanics in the new season.
So it's does it have a series like Diablo where certain characters are independent from the leagues or from the
legacy
seasons?
Thing? I don't know exactly how Path of Exile 2 does the legacy stuff. I assume there is, but I'm not 100% sure. I have to ask friends.
Gotcha. Bloodstained, The Scarlet Engagement. This news wasn't surprising. It had kind of like a pending 2026 window for a while, but it's had no news in a bit. But it will officially launch in 2027. So just moving from this year to next year. I forgot if we covered this last week. No, we didn't. My bad. Ananta. This is the one of those everything games, the one that was compared to GTA, but it does a little. I remember the trailer here showed off that it has so many different gameplay systems. Just to compare it to one other game is probably not doing it. You know,
this is the Spider-Man one, right?
Yes, this is the Spider-Man.
But also everything else, right? It does like
if you're thinking about like the most influential thing that's like, it's like, let's charitably being influenced from, it's definitely GTA, because it's a reveal trailer had like almost like one-to-one parody scenes of like the initial GTA 6 reveal. When you're doing character switching in this game, it does that pull out from like overhead view like GTA 5 into the next character. They already confirmed this some time back, but all the playable characters are earnable, There's no character gacha that like you roll with a currency to get a playable character. The only thing that they'll have gacha for is like cosmetics, from what people have seen at Gamescom going hands-on with it. So that's how they're going to monetize the game. So it's definitely, it's like Duet Night Abyss in that respect, where it's going away from like the gacha being playable stuff and being just like, hey, if you like cosmetics, go for it on that end. But yes, it is definitely like the everything game where like it has the web swinging, has some animations that are like almost straight up like Marvel Spider-Man 2. You'll have like a high system and all the other, like so many people have like jotted down what you can do in this game from Gamescom and other previous shows. It's like, sure, man. It'll be, like you said, coming to PS5, PC, and mobile devices on January 15.
I don't think I actually said that, so thanks for saying it. But yeah, January 15th for Ananta. No, maybe I did. I forgot.
And the PC version is available via Steam and standalone client on same day, because that's kind of a rarity, because usually they do most of these types of games do their standalone client first, and maybe like an Epic Game Store, and then they Steam later. But there's Steam and standalone day. Hopefully it's good. What else can you say? You know, like hopefully it's cool. But who knows?
They're definitely trying to sell it that it's cool. Well, the whole premise is basically like you got to go viral to save the world, I guess. how that works, I'm not sure, but that's the premise.
The trailer was definitely like, it was like a more narrative trailer, but it's definitely filled with that Joss Whedon-esque Marvel-style jokey humor, right? All of them.
Yeah.
Which, if that's up your alley, you'll enjoy the trailer. If it's not, good luck.
You might not enjoy the trailer. Some more 2027 dates. Cassette Beast 2002, which was introduced earlier this summer, I think at the Summer Game Fest PC Gaming Show, I think. It's going to be launching in March 2027. And they also did talk about their English voice cast. So that's listed up on the site. Let me look at the English cast here. Some names I don't recognize, but it does have Neil Newbin as one of the characters. So it's kind of fun. Exodus. This is the Mass Effect-like. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
From Archetype Entertainment.
Absolutely.
There's two different Mass Effect-likes. Kind of in development coming out next year. One is The Expanse, which is the Alcat game.
Which is one I'm excited about.
Yeah, that's the Alcat game.
Which means play it a year after a release.
But that one doesn't have a date yet, right? I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
But this, Exodus, is the one that like is a new studio actually with like literal Mass Effect DNA, meaning, you know, people who used to work at BioWare working on it. And that did get
BioWare alumni at Archetype Entertainment, and then working with Wizards of the Coast as the publisher. Ryan, what's the release date for this?
April 7th. And I've been starting to write down like my 2027. Like, all right, what are the games I want to hit? Like, I wrote Stranger than Heaven in January. February, I wrote Fable. I don't think I wrote anything for March yet. April, I wrote Exodus. So I'm starting to get my 2027 plans like at least loosely outlined. Exodus, I'm kind of like, I've not watched any of the media, but I'm still curious about it, almost like morbidly so. Like, I don't know.
I will give them this. The new character, like, me too, I haven't really been keeping up on, like, the character reveals, but the one that they, you know, that they showed off here was, like, this, I guess, octopus who pilots a mech. I'm like, okay, fine. That seems really cool. I would like an octopus piloting a mech. Companion in combat.
That seems convenient. You could reach all the levers at the same time.
And then like their name is Salt. But I hope this turns out well. Like we definitely wish we had more Mass Effects. Here we are. We're about to get two new Mass Effect-esque games. Hopefully they're both decent, because we have a really big gaping void of Mass Effect. And the last Mass Effect release with Andromeda, not the re-release with Legendary.
Andromeda 10 years old now, almost.
Oh.
Or is it more than that?
I think so.
Was that 2016?
Good question.
I still have not played it.
More than 2017, so next year.
Oh, so almost 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mass Effect 5 still technically exists, I guess.
Yeah. They say.
And I feel bad, like, you know, talking about Mass Effect, but we have nothing else to go on, really. So,
we're just being realistic, like, you know, because we don't know the state of BioWare after the Saudi buyout with EA.
Yeah. Then the last headline I had, this was at the, I think, Future Games presentation over at Gamescom. I think this is the one main RPG thing I saw out of it. Kind of a retro-style JRPG called Amphibian, where you play as a warrior frog, or at least, I guess, a group of warrior frogs. Got an official trailer at the Future Game Show. Got some interesting art, and it's coming out in 2028. And one of the key things they say is that it doesn't have grindable content. It doesn't have currency or shops or random encounters. So it's very much, I almost think of that like, not a strategy game, but I think like classic Fire Emblem, like where there's no shops, there's no grinding. You have a certain number of enemies and you have a certain number of allied units and you got to get through the game. That's not a comparison that the devs made. That's one that I've made in my head based on the way they describe this game, Amphibian. It's not having that grindable content to it. But if you really like Frog Warriors, that's what this game is. It's called Amphibian.
Frog people are cool.
It's right there on the tin. I actually played in the Neo 3 DLC. It opens up where you fight. I don't think they're borrowed. I think they're new. Like, I don't think they're in a Neo 1 or 2 DLC, but I'm not sure. Like frog ninjas, which is a pretty common trope, right? And one of the bosses in the Neo 3 DLC is like, imagine you had to fight the frog form of Jiraiya from Naruto. Like, that's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, like frog sage and then it goes, type, yeah.
Yeah, and then it goes and just borrows a bunch of old like enemies from the other games. So it kind of felt like it started out strong. But anyways, I just like the archetype of the frog, just like the frog squad.
That's actually one thing about Neo. We talked about this, that is kind of like the first Neo is kind of criticized for having low enemy variety. And then it had DLC, it added a few more, then Neo 2 added a few more, then Neo 2 DLC added a few more, then Neo 3 added a few more, and they just keep adding. And now it's got like really good enemy variety. So
yeah,
I'm just like building upon that. The press release description for this is funny because it's like it's Amphibian, a somber story driven frog based 2D RPG.
A somber story driven frog based. Yeah.
Oh, we're seeing James Barry. I caught it. I missed what you were saying, James.
Yeah.
I said it's not easy being green.
Sure.
There you go. I'm glad we got that a second take. All right. It looks neat. I'll put it on my radar for a couple of years out. All right, so that's Gamescom. Obviously, that was not everything out of Gamescom, but I tried to, you know, at least curate to the heavy hitters. And then as these things tend to go, a lot of these same games will then make another appearance at PAX in a slightly different format. And then somewhat true for TGS. TGS, though, since it's located, obviously, in Japan, usually ends up with a bunch more new projects from, like, Japanese indie studios that might not make it available to Gamescom or PAX. So, but some of the games will still show up there as well. There's always a little bit of overlap, but usually on that one, maybe slightly less. James, you're going to Japan for TGS, right?
Yep. Also doing, I can't say specifics, but I'm doing something like a day or two beforehand as well. So that's
cool.
You're also going to watch the new Madoka movie, and I'm jealous. I'm extremely jealous.
I guess also should say I'm not the only one that's going to be in Japan for TGS. Kite's going to be there for us as well.
And Junior, is Junior going to be there?
Junior
is. You said they're going to be there. Yeah.
Not for us, though. He's doing something on consultancy side of things.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Everyone's going to have a blast there. I was like, man, should have gone. But mainly for the Madoka movie. Everything else is set.
I'm excited for food that's good
food that won't kill you. Very exciting to get for looking forward to these days.
Another parasite has hit the lettuce, I've heard.
And that covers I think all the news for this week. Next week we're going to definitely be talking about Blood of Dawnwalker, so because that'll be coming out in a few days before we record. Oh, yeah, and Onimusha is, the day after Dawnwalker.
Okay, yeah, you guys are going to have to handle it, because I believe Hayes and I are going to be at PAX, and, I can't say any more than that, but...
Yeah.
We believe in you.
You can call in from the foyer.
That's right.
There you go.
Hold on, I mean, this is an appointment that's really important figure. Give me a second. Let me put on speaker.
There you go. But yeah, obviously have a good, safe time over at PAX, and you know, have a fun time too. Obviously it's always cool to have the opportunity to do those things.
Yeah. Interesting lineup this year. I'm very curious to see how things go.
So just to recap, we have that Star Wars Zero Company review on our site from Scott. For Game Informer from James, including the print magazine that's coming out. We have a few previews up for Dragon's Dogma 2, Persona 4 Revival, Heroes of Might and Magic 3's remake. Those are up on the site as well. We have the interview from Sneg. All of the Witcher 3 news and Witcher 4 news is up on the site, rpgsite.net. Join the Discord, discord.gg/rpgsite. Search for RPG Site on all the social media networks, and you should be able to find us. If you like this podcast, leave us a like, leave us a rating, leave us a comment. We love to see those. We'll be back next week talking about Dawnwalker and Onimusha, it sounds like. And until you hear from us then, stay safe, take care, and we'll see you all next week.
Is anyone interested in buying me a $400 oversized Homura plushie for my birthday? Let me know.